Welcome to the Equestrian Experience, a show we talk about what happens behind the rosettes and what we've tried so that you don't have to. In a world first, we and our guests will be openly sharing what we know from our extensive equestrian experience. This includes our exclusive access to our global experts, such as high-performance national vets, coaches, farriers, and even brands. If you're new here, consider subscribing. We're your hosts, Amanda Ross and Bex Mason, and today we are talking to a family of incredibly high-achieving eventers who have a passion for thoroughbreds. Please welcome Blair, Nikki, Charlie Richardson of Vantage Hill Thoroughbreds and Eventers. How are you guys?
Good.
Hi, Amanda. Good. We're all good. Thank you.
Good night.
And Bex?
Hi, guys. Thanks for coming on. Can't wait to talk to you about all things thoroughbred and eventing today.
We thought we might start with a little bit of a how do we know each other. So you guys are from New South Wales and I'm from Victoria, and for as long as I can remember, Nikki, you and I always evented together from when we were super young. And then all of a sudden Blair came on the scene, and then suddenly there's the boys on the scene as well. Now there's this whole Richardson family. So we've known each other forever, huh?
I know. I still remember, Amanda, when we went to Tasmania, was it?
I was thinking about that.
Yeah, we were bunking somewhere. I can't even remember what it was, but we had to ride some horses.
It was the Tasmanian Pony Club Championships, and you right. and Heath and I were invited as Bates-sponsored riders, and we were given pool horses to ride. We did the event on it. And remember, I was thinking about this. I was just laughing my butt off. You and I shared a room. And I remember when we were chatting that night, it was like being at some school camp, chatting, and you were telling me about this really nice guy called Blair that you just met and how lovely he was.
I'm glad that came up.
Yeah, that's hilarious. I'm glad you remembered that, because it was the first thing I thought of. I'm like, oh my God, how long ago was that? He's a keeper.
I know. Well, yeah. So, you know, you and I have been competing against each other and with each other since, you know, we were probably both 18. I think we're the same age. And, it's always lovely to catch up with you. And, as for Blair, he rocked up on the scene in 2000, I think. Yeah.
God, back then. Wow.
Wow. Yeah,
you've done all right then, Blair. You're still here.
Still here. Yeah, still going.
Fantastic. So we've got you guys on the pod today because we wanted to talk to you not only about you guys getting together as a performance horse family, but also that you've got a huge involvement with the racehorse industry and also the off-the-track thoroughbreds that you'll then turn over into amazing sport horses. So can you tell us a little bit what you guys do at your property, Vantage Hill?
We break in and pre-train is basically all we do. We break in a lot of horses a year. We have them back through. We educate them in the barriers. And most of our horses go into the Sydney trainers. And we do it mainly for the bigger horse studs. You know, we're lucky. We live in Scone, the horse capital of Australia. And so we do them basically for all the bigger stud farms. And then send them into the Sydney trainers is what we do. Yeah,
I'm just wondering on this on your breaking and pre-training yard, like how many horses can you break in within a year?
Look, last year I think we did about 250. I think on an average year we might break in a couple of hundred. It's pretty busy and pretty full on throughout the year. Now we're in our quiet time of year through till January, and then out of all the yearling sales start in January. And so we're busy right through sort of to August breaking in and pre-training, yeah.
Well, that must be one hell of a setup, and what organisation skills to kind of be able to produce that many horses from the very start up until where they start their careers. That is just incredible. Do you have many staff that help you out on the farm too, or is it just the family deal?
No, the family are
the kids
roped in. But you know, like for last year when we did those 250 horses, we had three guys, three other riders, and they're going pretty much all day with the horses. Yeah. And then we've got other staff to muck out and feed up, and we do spellers as well on the property.
So we have a ground staff team, and then we have our riders. And when we're really busy, we might have five ground staff and four or five riders. Blair rides as many as he can before he falls apart. And then
I'm getting older. My date of birth is catching up with me. Yeah,
I said, I'm the admin lady. I try and find the staff and do the bookwork and pay the wages and do all that sort of stuff. But
wow, what a huge setup you've got over there! And tell us about your facilities that you've got for all these horses that you start off.
Yeah, well, look, we've got a lot of stables and yards. We've got a couple of round yards undercover. We got three round yards, two undercover. And it's more about a system. And so you're starting a horse and you don't start them a big lot all at once. There'll be new horses coming in every week. And so they're just got the gear on and being driven and lunged, and then you've got horses going to our track, and so they're all at different stages, which actually makes it easier, and so you can be more efficient to get through a number of horses like that.
Yeah. Is it like a kid at school, like, I don't know, nursery school, and then the next stage, and then they're in the college, and then they're at the university, but going through the stages at your yard.
Yeah.
And Charlie, do you get thrown on a few of them as well?
Yeah, I usually ride half a dozen pre-trainers in the morning, and then after that I ride my own ones, which usually takes me up until about lunchtime.
Oh, excellent. So you must be loving the lockdown then.
Yeah, no, it's good fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're in lockdown, so when are you fitting in school, or is that on holidays? You just push that to the side a bit so you can ride all the horses while you're not at boarding school?
Yeah, I push that back as far as I can before school starts, usually cramming it on the last night of holidays.
Good job. Fantastic.
And Charlie managed to give one its first ride, like a breaker that hadn't been ridden this year in the round yard. Given the first, so he was jumping on a breaker as well.
Good job. Charlie, what do you like doing best with all of the ones off the track that you get there? So obviously you've been involved in it for a while. So what's your favourite part of the thoroughbred industry?
Oh, I think the horses themselves, they're great, and they've got a lot of potential to go a long way. So I like all the breakers and pre-trainers that come through our system. I like seeing ones here and there and going, this could be an eventer, and then seeing its progress, and if it's not a good racehorse, I'd hit Dad up to see if he could bring it back and give it a rehome, or just stuff like that. I enjoy doing that and the excitement with it.
So what do you look for in a thoroughbred that you think is going to turn event horse when you first see them come in?
Well, I personally like to see a long-legged, scopey type of horse. In Australia, sprinters are a big thing. There's a lot of 1200 meter races, and these horses are more nuggety, muscly types of horses, and so that type of horse for us in the eventing world and your jumping world, they're not so scopey in the respect that you want to jump them, and they don't tend to move that well for dressage, but they're really fast. Like you'll ride one and you go, this one, little canter. It will just burn around the track and win big races. I like to see a bigger type of horse, a longer legged, rangier type that looks like it could cover the ground.
Which is becoming less and less in Australia. They're breeding more sprinters and not stayers. So it is actually harder to find those thoroughbred types that will become eventers. Yeah.
I agree with you. I don't, you know, I'm not at the track and looking at anywhere near the amount of horses that you are, but it definitely seems the days of the leggy English stayer are definitely, you know, we don't have them as much. Blair, if I had to do dressage or something that you're describing, the canners like this, I'd just be pleasant.
Absolutely. Like we just had two come back to us that we liked as breakers, and they've completely developed and changed, and they're still nice types and nice horses, but they're, you know, they can't move, or they're nuggety, and you know, they're sprinters. They're not those rangy eventer types. So yeah, it's interesting how.
I love that word you use, nuggety. That's something I've never really used over here, but I do get
that's
what you
like
mean.
A
like just, yeah, like nuggety, like compact, and just
yeah.
We're boosting the impressions today.
They're not as tall. They're very compact. And some of those compact ones are little rippers, but they don't compete against the purpose-bred performance horses these days.
When the horses come to you for breaking, what age do you start them at?
Look, they've just been through the yearling sales and they're probably 18 months old.
Yeah.
So they're very young. Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, I remember I was over in New Zealand for a bit many years ago, actually, and we used to have some breakers in, and yeah, they come and they just seem so tiny, and they almost just feel like, well, I don't know, they're mini horses. I mean, they're not like the warm bloods that take a lot longer to develop. Like, you wouldn't think of breaking in a big show jumping warm blood at a year old or 18 months old, but thoroughbreds just develop that much quicker, don't they?
The big races, it's all 2-year-old races. And so as 2-year-olds, they're out there racing. All the money is in the 2-year-old racing. So they need the trainers need these horses broken in early and going. And it probably makes it easier to break them in because they're not big, strong horses out of control.
The thoroughbreds are actually easier to break in than the normal. Because they're babies. Like, some of them actually do look like foals, but if they've gone through a sales prep and through a sales, they're all built up and muscly and ready to be.
And they've been handled a lot from a young age as well, I suppose, rather than like the 3-year-old that's been out in the field for 3 years, that's spent 3 years of its life not being handled, and then you start that process. Whereas obviously the thoroughbreds, since they're a year, well, before that, probably 6 months old, they've always been handled. They've been in that environment, and it makes everything a lot easier. And nice process for them, I suppose.
And when you guys have got these youngsters and they're 2 years old, what sort of age, if you pick one that you want to come back, would you like to start it with its eventing? So obviously you get them and you train them purely as a racehorse. And then what do you do? What age do you want to start training them as an eventer? And what are you going to do differently or build upon what you've already done as a racehorse to start changing them once you get them?
Well, I reckon 4-year-old is a good age. You know, the trainers have known if they're going to be sacked because they're too slow, they're normally by that age, that's about the age that they're not going to continue their racing career. Mm-hmm. That's a good age to get a horse, as you know, Amanda, like when you get them up the grades, it takes 4 years to get them up to 4-star level. So by then they're sort of 8-9 year old, and then for them to build on that career at that level, they're only coming into their prime at 12-year old. So then they're really experienced. So I think that 4-5 year old mark is a really good age to get them going, and they're young enough too. They're not too old and other problems with them, then it's a good age to start them.
Mm-hmm. And then what's the first thing you do with them? So not that I've done a lot of work with them actually on the track, but I sort of assuming it's relatively basic, it's straight lines. Do you sort of do any work with them if you think that they're a bit of an interesting horse on the arena before they go off as a racehorse, or do you wait to do any arena work with them once you've got them after they've finished racing?
Well, actually, part of in our breaking in system, they actually go to our arena on week two before they go down to our track. So they're on our arena at week two. They go to the track the last day of week two, and then they have a couple of weeks on the track. So we see them up on the arena then. But if you've got a horse from that has been in racing and it comes back to you to try it, basically, yes, take it up to the arena and, like you said, go straight. A lot of them want to go sideways, so you can figure a lot out in the first ride if you can straighten them up and their temperament up on the arena anyway.
Yeah. And do you jump them straight away? So do you jump them on them? Do you give them a free jump? Like how do you test if you think that they're going to have enough scope as a jumper?
Well, Blair gets on and he'll go up to the arena and he'll go do a few laps and you go, righto, put the jump up. So, I mean, but you get those horses if they show a natural talent from the first jump, then you just go, yeah, that's a keeper. We watch it go around the arena, and if it's got an ordinary trot, we go, oh, well, maybe it can jump. So we will test it and see if it can jump. But these days we're a lot fussier. Back when we were 18 and 19 and 20, we just took any horse that we could. But like I said, the thoroughbreds aren't, they're not bred the same anymore. So they've got to be very special. They've got to be really good jumpers, and they've got to be able to trot for us to want to keep it.
Yeah, they've got to be able to move. How long do they need after racing to kind of mentally and physically adjust to a new life and eventing?
Well, I think it just depends on the individual horse's temperament. You know, some horses aren't going to make the adjustment because they're too revved up and they're too hot. And you know, some horses are naturally very quiet. And so that horse, you can make the transition quite quickly because it's got the temperament. And other horses will take longer to make that transition into it.
Yeah. I don't know about you over there, but here in England, I mean, often the racehorses sometimes have, coming off the track, have maybe a bad reputation. They say, okay, they're quite a buzzy horse. So thoroughbreds in general are known over here for being, oh, it's come off the track, it must be a bit crazy. But in my personal experience as well, actually some of the nicest horses I've had have come off the track because they've already had that experience of being on the race course in that environment. And they would just be, you know, lovely brains. They've been on and off a horse track a few times. They've, you know, been well handled. Do you think that's a positive thing for them coming from a racetrack into the career? It makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, I do. I think, they have learned how to gallop. That they're exposed to a lot of things in their racing career. And obviously some horses handle it better than others, which will then make the transition to an eventing horse or jumper or what a pony club horse, whatever it may be. And some horses will just not make that transition because they are too revved up.
No. So what is the difference, like if you're looking for a thoroughbred off the track that you wanted to do like low level hacking, what would you look for in that type of horse to one that you're looking? We've already said about the elite event horse that you wanted to be scopy and have a nice trot. And if you just want something more, just do some happy hacking, some local level pony club, what would you then look for in the horse? And does it matter if it's had previous injuries so much?
So for
if you're sort of just doing like, as you said, going out hacking, not doing any like high intensity things, you'd sort of not, depends what the injury was, but if it's just a small injury, I wouldn't really worry about it. Mm. And then, yeah, and also, when I'd look for like just a quiet horse, I'd want a good temperament so that I could be safe and be confident with what I'm doing.
Yeah, yeah. I think that is very important, isn't it? And the temperament comes through in kind of all sports and disciplines and to what you're going to aim the horse to do in the future.
So what would you guys say? So we've talked a little bit about the elite rider taking on, you know, the thoroughbred and what we're looking like. If you have someone that is more of an everyday rider, and like Charlie said, they've chosen that off-the-track horse for its thoroughbred, for its temperament, yeah. What would you say the first thing that they should do with that horse is when they get it home and they're trying to transition it? Like, what sort of work should they be doing with it? What should they expect?
Well, I reckon they need to, if you're just talking your amateur person, I reckon they need to get to know it. So they want to saddle it, lunge it first, know its temperament. We're lucky here because we can just put them in a round yard and give them a lunge no matter what. Yep. If I'm trying a horse as to see if it's good enough for an equestrian horse, I just take it straight to the round yard, give it a lunge before I hop on anything. So, we're lucky with the facilities, but I reckon if someone hasn't got those facilities, they can get it in the arena, give it a lunge and just get to know the horse, because firstly they've got to think about their own safety. They're dealing with a horse that they don't actually know. And if they can get it used to the environment, the bit that they're going to ride it in, they're going to be safer and keep the horse and them safer as well. So I would lunge it with the saddle on, make sure someone's around when they hop on to ride it, and get to know the horse from there.
Now, how do you guys get on them, by the way? This is a really random question. Do you vault on?
No.
Shane. there's a bit more broken.
Broken that I actually have to use a mounting block most of the time. Otherwise, I broke my knee, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, and sort of 20-something screws put in there. So I struggle to get on. So I use a mounting block, and some of them are not used to it. And as you climb up next to them, they're looking at you up above them and get a bit worried. And so I then just get in the saddle very quietly. But some do look back at you and get a little bit sensitive as you get on with the mounting block. And so you just go quietly again.
Purely because they're not used to it.
Well, I might get my horses from you off the track because I need a mounting block, way too short to be getting on, or the side of the fence or the bull bar of the car. It doesn't matter. So any off the trackers that you think might suit me, I'll get them.
I have to leave mine.
Well, Charlie's got a story. I mean, he got on one of the pre-trainers in the stable the other day. And
Might have been midway through the week. And I was waiting for one of our workers. So I was just standing with my horse saddled in the stable and waiting for someone else. And I'd been standing there for maybe 5 minutes. And then I just decided to shove my foot in the iron and climb on. And I think I wasn't like weary enough because I'd just been standing there and my horse had probably gone to sleep. And I might have toe poked it a little bit when I got on. It just shoved its head between its knees and just started bronking, and I had to jump off and.
Oh my god!
Did you cling to the side of the stable wall? Were you just like Spider-Man?
Watched it.
Oh my goodness!
Oh, that reminds me. I had one that used to flick its tail, and the amount of times I threw the leg over, and as I did that, it flicked its tail and got it caught in my skirt. And I just thought there were several times I just thought I'm half on and I've got my spur in its tail, and if I try to pull the spur out of its tail, I think
it's going to explode.
I just don't want to know. But I'm still here to tell the tale.
That's a scary situation as well.
And I know here in England now, they've got these classes called Retraining of Racehorse, the ROR classes. And they've actually become really prestigious, you know, to encourage people to get horses off the track and that have been in the racing life, for them to go on and do other things. And, you know, they take you to some big, good venues, and they have them in show jumping, they have them in showing, they have them in eventing, and all aimed at the thoroughbred horses. So it is great. And I think, yeah, people need to remember that these animals are just so versatile. And they're such athletes. And as you were saying, it's a little bit harder to find the event types that you want. But equally, there are the other types will go on to do all other sorts of jobs, like the Happy Hackers or just the riding club. They can have great temperaments as well, can't they?
Yeah, completely, completely. They are such a versatile breed. And
that's happening here as well, big time.
Yeah, we've got tons of off-the-track classes.
Yeah, it's coming through in the jumping and everything, starting to come to
and Amanda, you're a big part of that down in Victoria.
Absolutely. I think, well, Zazie, I mean, she, you know, won so many off the track rugs as an eventer and actually as a dressage horse, funnily enough. And yeah, have a very big involvement with the off the track and the welfare of racehorses with the VRC, which is, it's actually really lovely. And I really enjoy being involved. It's like, Charlie, what you were saying about seeing the racehorses when they start racing and picking the ones that you think are going to do the job later on and watching them and following them. It's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, I reckon everything I pick, like, guaranteed will come last because it's beautiful and it's on the bit, but it can't run to itself. So I know you guys must be better at picking a fast one by now than I ever would be.
It's funny, so we, you know, we have all these thoroughbreds through our system, and the owners say, oh, well, you know, what do you think? Will it make a good racehorse? And you know, I'll say, oh, well, it's really pretty and it moves really nicely, but I've got no idea how fast it's going to run.
Now, on the equestrian side of it, so Blair, you're from New Zealand, and Nikki, you're Australian, and then both five-star riders. And Nikki, you were at the 1996 Games as an individual with the wonderful Shampoo. So remember his breeding? Who was he by? He had, that's why he got his name, Shampoo.
Yeah, so my parents bred him, and they owned the mare Champagne. And we bred her to a local polo pony stallion here in Scone called Bamboo. So we
got cool.
And it's a shame that that wasn't his registered name, but Gordon, my oldest brother, Gordon, produced him for a while and registered him as a prelim horse, as wishful thinking. So
well, you got your wish.
His name,
was he bred as a polo pony? Was that his intended purpose?
So my dad,
wow.
And my dad, who's 86 at the end of the year, he played a bit of polo as well as being a cattle farmer. Bred his own polo ponies, and anyway, he bred Shampoo, and Shampoo was tall and gangly, and he said he tripped and said it was a disaster and pretty much sucked him. And we actually gave him away to another family for about 5 years to do pony club with. And then when my oldest brother Gordon decided, he dropped out of uni, he did a bit of horseback riding through the mountains, and then he decided he might start eventing and went to Heath Ryan, and he grabbed Shampoo out of the paddock, who was 10 at the time.
Yeah.
And then he just started with him, broke him down after 6 months, and I think I was about 17, 18 by the time I finished school, and Shampoo was 12. And I spent 4 years with him when I left school and got to 96 Olympics 4 years wow. later. Pretty wow. crazy. Like, he was just a special horse. He could he either won an event or was eliminated. So
what an amazing story, an amazing journey for you and that horse, though, cool. and even the horses.
Yeah, it was yeah. pretty fun.
And I love the fact too that firstly you got him and, you know, pulled him out of the paddock at 10. If you broke down, he's had an injury that he's come back from. You got him as a 12-year-old when you were 17, then spent 4 years and then went to the Olympics. Yeah. Like, Charlie, that's pretty inspiring. Yeah. You've got to go and grab something out of the paddock now, mate. Go and start. Yeah. And what about, is there a little bit of an argument about how many horses everyone can put on the truck these days? Are you, Charlie, sort of pushing mum and dad slightly out and filling it with a couple more horses?
Oh, well, not really. I poached Dad's good horse, which I think he was a bit upset about.
Yep.
But
was he? And did you beat him on it, show jumping? Do you actually like go a bit quicker in the jump offs by stealing his horse and then going faster than him?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm finding myself better. I'm riding this homebred that Nikki and Charlie now have just palmed off to me. I'm finding Charlie's great, my older horses. I've trained them, right? And there's this one, and if it's playing up, oh, you can ride that, Blair. I'm like, oh, great. So I get to ride that one and that one.
No. Oh, you must be the best at starting them then, Blair.
Well, I'm getting used to it, aren't I? I'm going to have to get a lot more used to it.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, that's fantastic. So what about a few quick family questions? So who's the best dressage rider?
Probably Nikki.
Yeah.
Yeah? What about the best show
jumper? Charlie. Yeah. On my horses.
Oh, well, Blair, you must be – are you the best cross-country rider then?
Yeah,
he is. Fastest to clean stables?
Well, that wouldn't be me because I haven't cleaned too many stables.
That'd be Oscar.
Wants to get out.
Because he misses half of the shit.
So not the most efficient. Got to come back and do it twice. What about anybody, the morning person? Who's the earliest up in the morning?
Me.
Yeah. Night person?
Oscar. That'd be Oscar. He's up late at night all the time.
Is that because he's studying, doing year 12?
No.
I'd like to think so.
Nikki actually comes to bed late, but that's because she's had 3 hours sleep on the couch overnight before she actually
comes to bed.
Nothing wrong with that.
Who's the most laid back out of you all? Oh, all of you.
All of them, I know.
Me, maybe.
That was a bad question.
What about funniest moment in training? Has anyone done anything entirely embarrassing and the rest of the family has just stood there and watched?
No, but I do remember once I was at a George Morris clinic.
Oh, yeah.
And I was riding a little horse. You might remember him, Amanda Spender.
With a Kiwi accent.
And
Spender.
I was in a lesson with Shane. I think he had Taurus back then and Wendy and Chris Chug. Anyway, George is putting this fence up and up
at Vicky's
and up and up. And I'm like, oh, God, this is getting far too big for me. And he built a vertical related line down to a big oxer. Anyway, I didn't quite get the right distance to the oxer and my little thoroughbred hit the brakes and we crashed through it and I was up its neck holding onto its ears. I nearly pulled the bridle off. Then he built it and I was waiting for him to put it down and I'm feeling rather stupid in front of Chris Chug and Wendy, who was on this great jumper at the time. And anyway, he said he put it right back up to the same height and said, right, now come around again and just get the right distance, make it work. And we're talking like a metre 40, not just a metre 20. I was absolutely cracking myself. So then I come around and go, I've got to get this right. This is going to look bad if I stop again. Anyway, jumped it. And he said, now, see everyone, If that was a warm blood, I would have had to have put it down because he's on this little tough thoroughbred. I put it back up to the same height. And so,
what an advocacy for the
thoroughbred.
Yeah.
And he made you jump a triple bar backwards.
Yeah. I jumped it one way, and then he told me to turn around and jump the triple bar the other way.
Oh my God. Now, you were mentioning, there was something you mentioned, our mate Shane Rose there. Now, we were sort of discussing that recent Tokyo silver medalist Shane copped a near fatal kick to the head, which put him in a coma. And we heard you were the only person there on that day. Is that correct?
Yeah. I was actually with Shane at the time. Shane and I were just riding a couple of his pre-trainers, and we were down the back of the property, and
we were staying with them in between events.
Some events at Sydney. And so Shane, anyway, he had one. He decided he wanted to long rein into the barriers, and it wasn't going in. And I was on another one, and anyway, he whacked it. He was standing a bit too close, obviously. It kicked out and right in the face.
Oh,
and I remember now is like if a horse kicks a timber rail, a 6x2 fence rail, and you just hear it go crack, that's the noise
I heard.
And then
because
the horse I was on was getting a bit worked up and running around, leaping about. Anyway, I look back and there's Shane just flat out on the ground. I'm like, what am I going to do now? So I ride over to him. I get a bit close. I jump off, and he's rolling around going, oh. I said, you're alive. I'll be back. Don't move. Whatever you do, don't move. So I rode back to the stables. I don't know where his horse went. There was one other girl there and sort of,
it was a weekend.
Yeah, and back then you didn't have an iPhone or a phone. Like, I didn't have a phone on me, and there was this other girl there, and I said, oh, what's the address of the property? So I was going to go to his stable phone and, like, ring an ambulance. And I think she was a foreigner, and she had no idea. So then I went, oh. So I said, here, take my horse, and there was this old feed car there. So I jumped in the car. And drove back down to Shane, who is in the paddock, and he's lying there with his face down, because I said, look, keep your head to the ground. And I picked him up, chucked him in the front of the car, and I don't even think it had a door. I think the back door was off it, or one front. There was no regio.
Your paddy wagon.
Yeah.
I went, I'll just take you to hospital. So,
not more.
I didn't go
to Camden, no. Even coming from the country.
So
this must have been so scary. Like, you're laughing about it now. Like, we're all like, but oh my God, I can't believe at the time you must have just been like hearing that noise.
There's all this blood, and then we're in the car, and he keeps going, oh, does it look? Is it all right? And I looked at him, and like his nose was over here, and everything. And I went, oh no, it's all right. We just got to get to a hospital.
Oh my God. I can't believe when you looked at it, you didn't drive off the road. That was some serious, like, well
and
done.
Then, there was roadworks on the way to the hospital.
Mm. So there's the lollipop man. And I'm going, and there's one lane and this wiggly little road, and they had closed it, and there's stop signs up. So I drive up to it, to the lollipop man. I'm like pointing to Shane in the passenger's seat, and he's gone, oh, you can go.
Thanks. Oh my God.
I just drove him to the, straight up to in the ambulance bay. And then I was bashing on the door to get them to open it up. Yeah. And then they came out to me and went, oh, now you can look after him now that he's here alive.
Yeah.
Oh, my
God. You're his hero.
What was the first thing that,
no.
yeah. Was it, Nicky's wife say? She wanted him to have reconstructive surgery. So
he she took him. she took the doctors a photo. Like he was in an induced coma for quite a while, a week or 10 days.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, can you bring in a photo of his face? Because he needed, his cheekbones were all broken and everything was broken. And yeah, she joked and she said, well, I'll bring in a photo of Brad Pitt and you can make him look like that.
Yeah.
Which was pretty funny. I mean, you know, she kept her sense of humour about her, as you had to.
Yeah, in really scary times.
Yeah. Yeah, you must have seen a few things in your time too. And to be, I think as riders we do, we see all sorts of, you know, accidents or injuries, whether it's, you know, a friend's falling off or horses sticking a leg through a fence or something. And I must say the amount of times I've looked at something and gone, ah, that's not ideal, and had to kind of deal with the fact that it's all over the place and there's blood all over the joint, but you still got to be able to keep functioning and actually get something done first aid wise, haven't you? So that's a fair effort, Claire.
Well, it actually, he told me it moved the it would hit him that hard that it dislodged a shoe on the horse. So that's how hard.
Oh, he was so lucky. He was so lucky. And I know Shane has had loads of injuries over the year, because when we had him on, he told us a little bit about those. So to come through that one, that is just incredible. And still be out there riding to level and getting silver medals. See how horse riders, tough breed, huh?
Yes.
Yeah,
tough or stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bit of both.
Yeah, that's what we keep
a bit of both.
Yeah.
Should we have some fun and do some, like, questions about Australia and New Zealand and the differences, and see whether Charlie and the crew can get the answers?
Yeah.
Okay.
See some of that? Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. So, guys, who invented the plastic banknote?
The plastic banknote?
Yeah, your note, your money, your currency that you've got over there. They're all plastic, aren't they?
Plastic banknote.
Is that Australia or New Zealand?
Australia.
Yeah. You're right. You're right on it, Blair.
Yeah, I've got it sorted.
Okay, what about Russell Crowe? Where do you think Russell Crowe is from?
New Zealand.
Yeah, he was born there, but I think he still considers himself an Australian, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Where were Lamingtons originated from?
Ooh, good question.
Yeah, I reckon it might be a Kiwi thing, actually.
No idea.
No, it's Australia. It's Australia.
Oh.
Okay, guys. Where is the pavlova from?
New Zealand.
Yes, Blair. Yes.
Oh, it's also New Zealand.
It is. The pav is a New Zealand
thing. It is.
Yep.
Yeah, according to my questions, it is. And which country eats more meat pies, Australia or New Zealand?
Australia.
Well, Australia would have got a bigger population.
Well, what have you said with in comparison to how many people are in that country versus people?
Australia.
It's New Zealand. 15 per person versus Australia's 12 per person.
15, right. There you go.
Yeah.
You're the quizmaster.
I'm liking this position right here. In fact, we should do this again with some British questions chucked in, because I'm sure we eat lots of pies over here too. Well, I eat a fair few pies.
We do eat
pork pies.
What a Brit. So you could ask some British
they're not the
questions.
Same, though.
No. Pork pies aren't the same as the meat pies.
Oh, what, the pies?
No.
We can agree on that one. Okay, who has more sheep?
There's more sheep.
Yeah, Australia, New Zealand.
New Zealand. It's a big sheep country.
Ooh.
It's known for its sheep.
Yeah, per person. But who has more sheep overall?
Australia would.
There you go.
Oh, awesome. All right. Well, let's do a couple of questions to wrap up. Nicky and Blair, if you could turn back time and tell your 18-year-old self something, what would it be?
Oh, goodness. I reckon, I don't know what I'd tell myself, but when I was 18, I was living the dream. I finished school. I didn't go to uni. I came home. I rode horses. I was having lessons, working. If I could go back there again, I would. I don't know if I would change anything. I think they were the best days of my life.
I'm a bit the same as Nikki. I don't know if I'd change anything. I never went to uni. All I've done is ride horses. I don't know anything different. But I reckon probably one thing I need to do is learn how to cook. So I reckon even today at lunchtime,
who does
that? I found a meat pie and put it in the microwave, and that was my lunch. So probably one thing I need to do, should have done, was learn how to cook a bit more.
Right, okay. Who does all the cooking? Nikki, is that you?
Correct.
Right, okay. It could be a lockdown activity. Blair does the cooking. We're going to come and film this. Now, what's it like working with family? Like, really? Like, Charlie,
yeah, you need to ask Charlie that question.
All the time, or sometimes they just like...
It gets slightly frustrating sometimes, but overall it's great. Because I've got two very inspiring parents, but it gets a little bit frustrating every now and again. But because we've got so many common interests, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, that's so great. I mean, to have been growing up with such good role models as your mum and dad, and to be able to nick your dad's horses as well, to take them out competing and then beat him in the ring. I mean, doesn't get much better than that, does it? So what advice do you guys have for any aspiring riders out there picking the first racehorse off the track?
I reckon go for it. Just follow your dream. If it's what you want to do, grab a racehorse. They are easy to get. Yeah, just go for it. Just do what you want to do. As I said, Nikki and I, neither of us went to uni. We haven't got any qualifications, and we love riding horses and we love producing them, and we've loved all the competitions we've done, which have taken us, you know, around the world. And yeah, we've had a great time.
Yeah, I also think like if they're if someone wants to get a thoroughbred off the track, they've got to be pretty careful as well. There are a few people out there that see a free horse or a cheaper horse that they can start with, but they have not a lot of knowledge about horses or thoroughbreds. Mm. Thoroughbreds are actually pretty flighty and tricky horses, especially if they've come from racing. So you have to be careful and have good advice from someone that knows something about thoroughbreds before you take one on.
Mm. Yeah, so making sure you have some professionals surrounding you and you've got someone that you can go to help in those tricky times when you're going through the development stages and getting used to your horse. The support network team is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and completely.
Do you think too that the new retraining programs that like I know the VRC is a huge retrainer program, which I love seeing the thoroughbreds go to those middle people. So do you guys also have that program? So the horses come off the track and then they basically go to a retrainer and they spend time with the retrainer becoming a performance horse, and they get sort of gauged and graded onto what ability they think they're going to be best suited to. And then anybody that's looking for a thoroughbred can go to the retrainer, and that way they've already got that information. They know exactly if the horse will suit them. They can be guided in the right direction. So is that something that you guys do as well?
No, we don't do that at all. And I know Victoria is sort of further ahead than Racing New South Wales. Mm-hmm. I know that's their plan. That's starting to happen, that sort of thing in New South Wales. But no, look, we just basically for us, we just concentrate on our business, our own performance horses, and just are looking ourselves for our own performance horses and help someone local if they want the guidance and the help with it is what we do.
Yeah, oh, fantastic. Well, I do. Yeah, I love what the VRC are doing, and they have both the retraining program. They also have the reset program, which is for the thoroughbreds that may have had an injury or their temperament's a little bit trickier. So basically those ones also get that chance of having a second life. And like I'm like you, I think like Zazie being my, you know, last little thoroughbred who was listed for Tokyo, I just think that when you get a good thoroughbred, they are such outstanding horses with incredible work ethics. So fantastic to see you guys with this huge business. You know, like you said, didn't go to uni, you're passionate about horses. You've now made this incredible business all based on that, and you're still competing at the same time. So I think that's a huge incentive for people that really love horses and are passionate to show that you can have a fantastic business and the whole family's involved. And yeah, it's really amazing. And thank you so much for sharing all of that with us.
I know. Thanks for having us on the show, Amanda and Bex. It's been enjoyable.
On the show.
It's so interesting. No, it was so interesting just to hear all your story about all how the racehorses go through the process and how you built up your business to what it is now. So when I come over to Australia, I'd love a fully guided tour, please, of your property.
Oh, me too.
Anytime. Yeah, well, I was almost thinking we should take the computer around and show a bit of the, the footage.
We have to get our technology up to date, but that would be awesome for the future.
Yeah. No, that'd be fantastic. It'd be great to see it firsthand. So thanks, guys. Anyway.
Thank you.
This has been the Equestrian Experience with myself, Amanda Ross, my co-host, Bex Mason, and this episode's guests, Blair, Nikki, and Charlie Richardson. So to send in your questions for our upcoming episodes, enter our competitions and access our other episodes, be sure to visit the equestrianexperiencepodcast.com. And you can also follow us at Amanda Ross Equestrian, at Bex Mason Show Jumping, and find the Richardsons at Vantage Hill Scone. So up until next time, have a great equestrian experience, and thank you again, Bex, and wonderful Richardson family.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bex.
See you. Nice to meet you, Bex.
Bye.
Bye.